Once upon a time, in a land long since burned to ash, there lived a young princess who loved her kingdom.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that brings you all of Book Talk's most popular books and tells me whether or not you should take the time to read them. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. So today we are reading or reviewing Kingdom of Ash, which is the very last book in the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas.
And our last Sarah J. Maas book. We've now done all of her books.
Yes, we've done her every book she's written to date on the podcast now.
Oh, the new one, Avatar 6.
Avatar 6. Yeah, new Avatar book, please. But that's kind of crazy. We've been on a long odyssey through several SJM series now. And I think this is her only kind of like completed one.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, this is the first or the only SJM series where there's really like a conclusion.
Yeah, she's leave it alone.
Yeah, don't fuck up this ending.
That's how I feel. So, yeah, this is like a whole whopping like 900 page monster. This, obviously, we're going to spoil things that happened in previous books, but we're not going to spoil what happens in this book yet. But Aelin has been on a long, long journey at this point to reclaim her kingdom, where we leave off from the book before, which was Kale's book, actually, technically. Kale is on his way back with Irene, his new wife, semi-healed. And Aelin has been captured and is currently in Maeve's clutches. And Rowan and the other Fae are looking for her. Meanwhile, Manon is on her own quest to find the Crokin witches with Dorian. And they're sort of getting ready to go to war. Adian is in Tarrasyn, preparing the armies that they do have to kind of defend Tarrasyn's borders. So, yeah, I mean, it kicks off from there. And basically, it's a war book. It's whole 900 pages full of war and trying to get people, lots of battle scenes, trying to get everyone in place at the right time as they all kind of converge on Tarrasyn from these kind of separate quests that they're on for allies and then obviously to free Aelin in general. So,
I mean, it's crazy because this book picks up where Empire of Storms leaves off.
Yes. And it feels like so long since you've read, you know, that book, because then Tower of Dawn is in the middle. But lots of Tower of Dawn characters in this book, because obviously the Rux come and join in the battle. So
you have only about 30 characters to keep track of their storylines, plus a bunch of other side characters.
This is a daunting undertaking, to say the least.
Yeah, I think there are probably 10 too many characters, but
As someone who read this nearly 5 years ago, they just allowed me to spend like 20 minutes reading a summary because I don't remember half these storylines of all these many characters. And 20 minutes of a summary was skimming.
Yeah, I am the person who read this book most recently. I read it a few weeks ago. So for me, it's the freshest.
Okay, well, do we have our final Sarah J. Maas reviews?
Yes.
They were lame.
They were just long because it's such a saga. I get it. Everyone like wants to write their love letter to the series, which I get, but you know, they were long.
Okay. I have a review. It's a 3-star review on Goodreads because the 1-stars were lame as fuck. Not gonna lie. And it says, we're not going to talk about it right now. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I have 2 5-star reviews. One is a 5-star that says she did not yield. Mm-hmm. And then the other is a 5-star that says it had all the things I love. 1, women working together and kicking ass. 2, a happy ending.
Lots of women working together and kicking ass in this book.
Oh yeah, it's the girl book. It's the girl power book.
Girl boss book.
Yes, it is. Okay, so I have 3 reviews that are all, I'm going to read like the quick, like one lines of them. All five stars. The first one, rereading this was both an immense joy and a mistake. Everything hurts, but I'm so happy right now. Like, yeah.
Same girl, same.
The next one, I'm in mourning for the foreseeable future.
Period.
Said yes.
Yeah.
Finishing this book is so devastating, honestly. It's like, yeah.
Well, you spent so much time on the entire series.
Yes. And like, it kind of hurts to say goodbye to the characters. Like, I miss them.
Yeah, I agree.
Same.
Okay. So this one's actually 4 stars, but it just says high key epic. The perfect summary.
Oh. The overall Goodreads rating is 4.71 out of 5 stars, and the Amazon rating is 4.8 out of 5 stars. So people love the ending to this series. Yeah. What do you guys think?
SJM, you did it. This book was amazing. I gave it 5 stars. I mean, I could not put it down. I think I read it in 3 days. And that's a lot considering it's like over 900 pages. So, slay.
Yeah.
You can see my reactions when Catherine's talking, because if you're not watching the video, we're together. So I realized I made a crazy face.
Yeah, you did just make as I was talking. So rude.
I also give it 5 stars. I thought this was a great book. I thought it was a great ending to the series. I thought not everyone got everything they wanted, and there were some crushing moments. So for me, I thought the book hit the right tone of like some happy things and like things that worked out perfectly and were a fairy tale, and then some things that were like brutal and like a letdown and like hard. And a lot of like plans changed in this book, so it wasn't like what the characters originally planned and wanted to happen is what happened. So I thought there was like some good scheming and like backup plans and all that stuff in this book.
It's low-key impressive that SJM could keep track of all these characters and their storylines and giving them semi-satisfying endings.
I certainly could not. But all the headliners are obviously the most important ones.
Yeah. Well, I gave it 4 stars. You think, because I think there were too many happy endings.
Wow, really?
Wow. Okay, so, granted, I read this a long time ago. I think the book was really long. Like, mm-hmm. I loved it. I obviously loved it. I loved the series, but it was really long, and I feel like the end was too satisfying. Like, you had, like, 15 main characters. You could have killed one of them.
That's
true. You know, like, everything just, like, wasn't as hard as I would think it would be, and it was like a lot of just battle stuff to keep track of. Like, I was in it when I was reading it, I just didn't think it was a perfect 5 stars.
That's fine. I will say I did think it was really hard, but I agree with you. I think she could have killed some more characters,
but there were some really tragic deaths.
There were, which one we'll get into later. Yeah. But also, I didn't love all the romances in this book. Like, there were some couples that I just think didn't need to happen.
That's the other thing. Everybody ends up in their perfect little couple, and they're all couple friends.
Yeah. It's like,
that's disgusting.
Yeah, it's no for me.
These people have gone through so much trauma that I'm okay with them being perfectly in their couples.
No, that's one of my critiques of
in
the book.
In romantasy, only the main character should be guaranteed a happy ending.
Well, I agree with that statement.
Well,
anyway, I did think, I normally hate war books and books that are so battle-centric. That's why I don't really like the third ACOTAR book that much. So I was really surprised that I enjoyed this one as much as I did. Yeah.
This is even more heavily war-leaning.
Yes, and I do think she could have cut out some of it. But overall, great book.
Well,
plot.
We're talking about all the war stuff. Is the book more plot or character driven?
It's definitely plot.
Oh my God. So much plot.
There are too many characters.
So much plot.
Character driven.
Yeah. Although a lot of character growth.
Sort of, I guess.
I mean,
I think, I mean, Aelin Aelin goes through some stuff in this book, but I would still, it's very, very plot driven because they just have to like fight.
They're
now. Yeah.
They're going through it.
Skipping, have you read other books by the author?
Yes, all of them.
Then, okay, a big one for this one because it's so chunky and we've already kind of mentioned it, but how is the pacing?
I'm just going to tell you, this was before I logged my dates read on Goodreads, so I have no idea how long it took me to read, but I know I blew through it. Like, as much as it is long, it's hard to put down because you want to find out what's happened to each of the characters. And every time you like, you're like, oh, it's getting good. It switches to another POV and you're like, well, I got to get back to whatever storyline.
This is one of the switching POV books that I think they do. I think Sarah J. Maas does a good job with the switching POVs. I think she does. I think she keeps you interested in each section.
Yes and no. It's too many POVs.
It is too many POVs, but I do think she manages to keep most of them interesting.
And they're short enough that you can get through them.
Right. Kale and Adian continue to be my least favorite. So more L's for the men. But
yes. Adian is the worst.
Adian is such a little pissy bitch boy.
Hate Adian. Oh my God. We can get that in the non-spoiler section, but that's one of the couples that I'm mad at. I actually thought the pacing was really good for being so long. Because I was the same. I like ran through this book. Like, I like put off my job responsibilities to read this book. Like, I was like, I have to finish. I need to know what happens next.
Slay.
Even though it took you like months to pick it up and finish it and like start it.
Yes. It literally did take me months to actually
It's daunting.
It's intimidating.
It's daunting. Yeah.
It is. And I knew that once I started it, I was going to get sucked in. And so I was waiting for my moment that I could afford it.
Well, your moment has come.
Yeah.
And now you're back with SJM. Congratulations.
Wow.
Bold.
Okay. So would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
Oh, fuck yes. Yes.
Yeah.
This would be an epic movie series.
Yes.
It'd be an epic like TV series. Like I know we say this every episode about like Throne of Glass and ACOTAR, but like a Game of Thrones style TV series.
Yeah. HBO better pick this up, or like Netflix or something. Something with deep pockets.
I think someone owns it, but I don't think it's
in production.
Hulu.
Yeah. Hulu owns it, but they've done nothing with it for years, and I'm pissed off at them. I think they eventually lost the rights.
I think they did.
So I think it's now up in open market again. So shout out like Netflix, HBO, Prime. Let's get something going.
Right.
Prime's been doing the Lord of the Rings stuff.
They have been.
All right. Well, we're already here. Busy girl rating.
Yeah.
Oof. You know what? I'm just going to give it a 5 because I think if you go this long, if you are on the 7th book of this series, for how long this book is, it goes by so quickly. And you are already committed. If you're hitting this book, you are going to finish the series. So I think I'm going to give it a 5 because honestly, I blew through this faster than I did Tower of Dawn.
That's true. I do think, like, I think one of the reasons the ratings for this book is so high is like only the mega fans make it here. Like, if you've read the 7th book in a series, like you're kind of in it. I am not going to be that generous. I think I'm going to give it a 3. It is really big and it is a huge time commitment. So I'm going to echo what I said a little bit earlier that I think it's a pick your moment book where if you just don't have a ton of time to read, there's so many perspective changes that I think it's going to be confusing for you if you need to take a bunch of time in between picking it up and putting it back down. Because that was a huge barrier for me starting it is I just wasn't in a place where I could read very much at once. And so every time I went back to the book, I was like, wait, what had happened? Like, who was character am I with again? Like, it was kind of jarring. So I think you're better off. Like, I think it's well worth reading, but I think it's also worth waiting for a time when you have a little bit more space to just kind of like sit and read.
But hey, just sleep is for the weak.
I was very sleep deprived when I
was. Yeah, period. I was too, because it was during KSHB time.
Yeah.
Like COVID for me. I agree with everything Casey said. She pretty much took the words out of my mouth. So I give it a 3. And I just think this book could have been like 300 pages shorter. And that's saying a lot, because that would still be like a 600 page book. But like I said, I don't need every character's storyline, because some of them I don't like that much. But yeah, it's worth the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, now it's time to do a spoiler alert. Like, oh my God, I am excited to discuss this book because yeah, I just read it. I know you guys read it a while ago, but I'm so like still in the emotions of reeling from the conclusion of it all that I'm ready.
Are you in a book slump because of it?
No, actually, I feel like this was one of the things that I finished. I definitely like took a day to just sort of like be sad and kind of think about it. But it like excited me because it was so good. Like, I feel like when you finish a series, sometimes it's like re-energizing because you're like, oh, like I forgot how fun it can be to just be so obsessed with the series.
I remember when I read them, I read Akatar and then this, and then I jumped into Crescent City like right away because I was like, I need this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the only way to do it weirdly.
I need more of this feeling. I need more of like that obsession and the saga of it all.
Just reread Akatar.
I actually might have read I might have read these before Silver Flames came out.
Wow.
Shit.
It all was like mushed together in my head, so.
Right. I did read all these books super spaced out, and I kind of want to make it a project this year to read them all again. I'm already thinking about rereading the series. Time? Yeah. But I just want to, I want to get them all like back to back to back.
Combined, how many pages is the series? Like that's on my mind.
I'm sure it's Google's level.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Thinking of that makes you want to die, kind of. Like that's too many.
You want to do it.
I do. Hmm. Okay, anyway.
The spoiler of all spoilers.
Yes.
Don't.
The end of the series. There's a lot that happens. Read it.
Yes. Everyone gets their ending. Okay. So first question is, after Of Tower Dawn, were you excited to pick this book up or were you hesitant? And I'm going to go ahead and answer first because I was extremely hesitant to pick up this book. I think that's part of why I had so much trouble like starting it and then kind of backing off and not really finishing it or like being ready to like get fully invested. Is like Tower of Dawn was a book slump book for me. Like I read it and I was like, oh, I just need to like not read. Like it kind of killed my enthusiasm a little bit. So yeah, fuck Tower of Dawn personally.
I was excited to pick this one up because I was like, now back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Yeah.
That's around what I was feeling, but Tower of Dawn, I just wanted to get through it. Like it was a get through book.
I know, and I said this in our episode, I'm pretty sure, but like I did not dislike Tower of Dawn.
No,
like I'm not a Tower of Dawn hater, sorry.
Yeah, I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it.
Like it's if I reread the series, I would probably not read Tower of Dawn again.
You don't need to.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
You did.
If you've already read it,
flying on the birds, you'd be like, "What?"
I'm saying if you've already read the series,
okay, fair. But if you just skipped it in general, you'd be like, "Who are all these people on the birds?"
Oh yeah, no, yeah. I can't skip it. But
who's this Irene girl? Why?
Okay, got it. Yes, you need it in the terms of the series, but.
Oh my god,
it's a miracle. It's a miracle he can walk and he knocked a girl up.
Well, we know he wasn't paralyzed all the way.
Oh, I don't want to even think about Kale's sex life.
Okay, enough. Ladies,
TMI.
Okay, so the very beginning of this book, the kind of biggest part that we're like, oh, what's gonna happen, is Aelin is being tortured really horrendously and brutally by Maeve and her lackey, and Rowan's trying to find her. What did you think of the beginning and its depiction of trauma and scars?
It was a lot.
Yeah. It was crazy with the, because you didn't know what was real and what was fake. And there's these whole, like, conspiracy theories online that the entirety of Kingdom of Ash, like, she was still trapped in the iron coffin the entire time. And, like, none of it happened. I don't actually think that that's happening. But, like, Maeve was fucking with her mind and seeing, like, what would happen, what were different scenarios if she hadn't meddled in her life. And it was wild. It was really sad when Maeve, like, erased all of her scars and erased all of her trauma.
One of the saddest things in the book, because, like, Aelin lived for her scars. Yeah. They told her story and her resilience, and then they were gone.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And it was sweet that Rowan, like, redrew it, but it's different than, like, what it was originally.
Yes.
Because she lived through that salt mines of Andovir, and the fact that all of that was wiped clean.
Yeah.
It, like, wiped away her.
It did. That was sad.
Yeah. No, I thought one of the biggest parts of it, which I think is true too, of sort of like more like real life trauma, is the feeling of being gaslit. Like, people in abusive relationships talk about that, where you have a horrific experience with your partner, you know, a violent episode, and then the next day they pretend that everything is okay. And that's kind of what it felt like to me, is that, like, constant gaslighting of her not knowing what was real, not knowing what had actually happened. And so I thought that was really smart, and, like, it was really hard to read, but I also, like, it was very mental, and I liked that there was, like, this psychological aspect of it. It wasn't all about pain. It was also about, like, trying to erase who she was. And so, you know, I was, you know, proud of her for sticking with it. And I thought it was a good depiction of, like, what it takes to carry on, like, where she's just, like, forgetting who she is and just holding on to, like, one line of a memory and being like, I'm losing everything, but this is, like, the one thing that will keep me going.
And then little Fenris being by her side the entire time in wolf form.
I know. That was so sweet. And their little blinks.
Yeah. It was, I don't know, like, it's like I have a lot of emotions from reading that section, like a wide array. Like, it was sweet that Fenris was there, but also you're sad, but also, like, you're happy because she's surviving. And it was, like, a very, I don't know, tumultuous.
Well, and she wasn't just okay after she was rescued. Like, Rowan had to kind of, like, rehabilitate her.
No, but, like, she was surviving.
Yeah, she was surviving, but, like, they could have done the easy thing of being like, oh, she's out, she's free, she's angry, we go to war. But no, she was, like, having trouble speaking. Like, Fenris had to help her out. Rowan had to, like, be calm and careful with her. And then, like, she finally got some of her power back, but she always had a little bit of trauma after that.
I also love that Lorcan is the one who, like, gets her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do too.
Because he softy. Fucked that up.
That big softy.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's cute. It, like, redeems him a little bit, which he needs after.
This whole book is Lorcan's redemption story.
Yeah.
It really is. Honestly, he's the main character. Like,
ripping off parts of his clothing to give to Elodie, yeah, to use as pads. Crazy.
Yeah.
So funny.
Yes. So many redeeming things.
Yeah.
I know. I love how much he loves her, even though she's, like, not ready yet.
He's just like, well, fuck you. You just got my, like, bestie. Like,
yeah. You literally betrayed us all. And now she's been, like, tortured and is, like, a broken person again.
Yeah.
Damn.
Speaking of broken people.
A lot of broken people.
What did you think of Manon and Dorian's storyline?
So I
love that romance.
Yes, I hate Manon and Dorian. I hate them together. I am, like, the biggest Manon Dorian hater.
Okay. And
it sucks because Manon is one of my favorite characters of all time. Like, I love her so much.
I know you do.
I love Aelin, but honestly, I read the books for Manon. And I was like, why the fuck is she with him? Their romance does not make sense at all. There's no chemistry.
There's a lot of sexual tension.
No, it's weird. I
worst.
Bought into it.
I didn't either.
I'm not sure they bought into it.
No.
Dorian's storyline is weird in this book, but he's like getting his powers away. Yeah, I don't know. He suddenly can do everything with his powers. Mm-hmm. I think that's stupid. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
But he's instrumental in finding the other keys. However, Manon's storyline in this book is outstanding. Her like quest to find her the other witches that she are her relatives and rallying all the witches to come to Terrace and aid. Like Manon's storyline is epic. Dorian dragged her down.
Yes. Yeah, it's like her finding her identity because of she's half of Cochran and half yellow legs. Or not yellow legs.
Iron teeth.
And trying to rediscover her own past that's been taken away from her. And trying to get on the side of the Cochran witches and convince them to help her, even though she's half their enemy. And I thought that was really interesting. I agree. I didn't love that Dorian's powers just suddenly manifested and they were like limitless. Mm-hmm. And then also like, I was just mad in general at Elena and all of the meddling with the ghosts and how they were just like, oh yeah, no, only Aelin can sacrifice herself.
I still don't understand why Dorian had powers.
Well, because he could have been what Aelin was. But he didn't manifest his powers quickly enough. It didn't make sense because then he did manifest his powers. And I'm like, then couldn't he sacrifice himself?
So this is part of what annoys me in the book is I actually think the farther the series goes along, SJM loses her grips on the world building a little bit. Because also the word keys don't really make sense. Like what they can do and how they work is like sort of confusing and not really explained. Like I ultimately don't really get why they're so important. Like they just say, oh, they're so powerful. They can open worlds. And I'm like, but I don't understand why this is the end all be all of the series is like getting these keys. Because I agree. But what I think should have happened, because I'm against the Man and Dorian couple and I don't think they make sense together. And their romance doesn't even read great. Like, it just reads awkward.
Yeah.
He should have died. He should have sacrificed himself and gotten the keys because he had them all. And that should have been his contribution to the series is he should have elected to kill himself. And that would have been hugely emotional. It would have been very redeeming for him and some of his flaws. It would have felt like a completed story arc. And then this, like, weird romance he had with Manon, I think that would have been the perfect end to it, like, because they're not meant to be together. Like, she can't be owned, you know?
No, because I don't see
she's the queen of all the witches.
Yeah, I don't see them lasting because he's human technically, so he's not gonna live forever.
That's what, why does he have powers?
That's a whole thing about like him being one of the like descendants of Elena.
See, I think it's stupid.
Oh, I agree.
Like I said, Dorian's storyline, dislike.
Yeah, I didn't like his story.
Dorian, and I like Manon.
I like Dorian and how he ends up being like this kind of snarky guy who comes into his own and like not under the will of his father or Kale.
Because I feel bad for him because like his love was like beheaded in front of him earlier.
But he has nothing really like to live. Like he's still mourning her, which is part of why his relationship with Manon feels awkward is because he's not really over her, which I think is totally fine. But it's just like, this is not a real romance then.
Yeah, I think he should have sacrificed himself because like everyone was pointing to Aelin to do it, but she has a mate. She has a husband. Yes. She has a kingdom that she has to save.
She's the real like leader queen who has to get everything together. Like
the whole time he planned on sacrificing himself.
I did too. And then he didn't do it. And I was like, now I'm kind of losing respect for you again because I feel like you're kind of being a pussy. Like, you should volunteer to do this. I'm sorry. Like, I know
anyone would be scared when they get to the point of it.
Right. Like, I can totally understand the resistance because even Aelin is deeply afraid of doing it, which I think is actually a great and like very deep part of the book is they're not just like, fuck it. We're going to sacrifice ourselves and we don't even care that we're going to die. You know,
no, like, they were upset.
She really mourns like the idea of not being with Rowan and not being around to have the life that she really wants to have.
Right.
And I think that's sad.
Her the kingdom and she'll never get to rule it.
Right. But I think Dorian ultimately should have done it because the whole weird way they get out of it, where she gets some of her power back and then doesn't, and then escapes, it doesn't really make sense to me.
Dorian the gods is super weird.
The whole scene with the gods, it gets off the tracks to me. I don't think it really makes sense.
Well, I did like how the king came in clutch. Like, and we find out what his name was.
Yeah, he gets this cute little redemption arc to sacrifice himself for his son.
Yeah. And being like, yeah, I named my son Dorian. because that's the only name I could think of, even though the Vogue was taking over my brain. Mm-hmm. I thought that was sweet. And I was like, that's a good way of doing it to save Aelin. I did like that Aelin ended up losing her power. So she wasn't just like still all powerful after this very like traumatic incident. But I mean, it's sad because it was right before the big battle and I'm like, oh God, are y'all going to win now?
Yeah. I was like, how are you going to do this? But that's part of what I mean by like, I appreciated that in this book, not everyone got what they wanted and it wasn't easy. Like, even though they didn't die, they all gave up stuff, right? Like, and the plans had to change because Aelin wasn't this sort of all-powerful magic wielder anymore. Okay, also I want to, but I saw the question you just put at the bottom of the doc. Mm-hmm. So the one thing that has been eating at my brain is that there is a scene, I think in book 3 or 4 of the series, where Manon has an interaction with one of the Vogue princes, I think, mm-hmm. and they try to like mind control her or something, and they can't. Like, all the other witches fall under, I don't remember the details because it was so long ago in the book series, but it was like all the other witches were basically like subject to the Vogue's power, and Manon was the only one who wasn't, and it was because like they fear the golden-eyed witches. Which is why the witches hold the golden eyes to such high esteem, is they have this like crazy magic resistance. Like, it's, and it's feels like a really significant detail in the book that it's in. And then it never comes back. Like, it felt like the one Easter egg that like SJM just like totally dropped. Cause I'm like, what were we supposed to get from that? Like, why did that not come back and become important?
Superpower so that Manon couldn't be hurt.
It's just like, what?
Or it could have been Easter egging the Asteri.
Because I don't think Maeve is an Asteri, because I interpreted like Maeve as the Asteri. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maeve, no, sorry. I get Maeve and Manon confused sometimes because their names are so similar. But
yeah. I think Maeve is an Asteri for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
I do too.
Next, the question I put at the bottom of the doc is Maeve an Asteri? Asteri, if you're not following, are the big bad in Crescent City that we realize are also present in Akhtar. Mm-hmm. So the and they're all world walking. So the question is, did they come to this world to eat it or just, you know, live off of it? And is Maeve one of them? Or are the Vows Asteri?
I don't know. I do think
Maeve is Asteri.
I don't know if the Valgar are Asteri, but I feel like they're under the control of the Asteri.
Or are they princes of hell, you know?
Yeah, I think.
I don't think so, because I think the princes of hell are actually good.
They're good guys.
Right? Yeah, I don't think they're the princes of hell.
I know.
It's all confusing, and it hasn't been talked about yet, because.
And that's why I'm afraid. There were, like, TikToks after Crescent City 3 that were like, leave Aelin alone!
Well, yeah, I'm worried that she's going to delve back into the Throne of Glass world, and it's going to fuck up Aelin's happy ending.
Well, they brought up the Lydia or whatever is a descendant of
Aelin, yeah, or Brandon,
yeah. So like, you know, there's been world walking between her world.
So yes, I do think the Asteri have touched that world, but I think there's a reason why the Asteri have not taken over that world, and I think it partly is because of Maeve, and I think it's partly because of the Cochrane.
I think Maeve just went rogue and found her own world and was like, hey, I rule it now.
Yeah, I do think that is.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like.
But she's a benevolent dictator compared to the other Asteri.
She didn't eat the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More souls.
She just wanted to be the boss.
No soul eating in this book.
Not that we know of.
So while we're on the threshold, the subject of the kind of supporting cast, there are a lot of other storylines that we also read in this book. Among
them are, I dare you.
I'm going to list them. Irene, Nezrin, Kale, who are kind of like the major figures from Tower of Dawn. Then there's also Lorkin and Elodie and Adian and Lysandra. You know, did you guys have a favorite, least favorite, any beef with any of them?
I have a beef. And it's Adian because he's a bitch boy.
Yes. I do not want him and Lysandra to end up together. I hate
Lysandra's a queen. She's a boss ass bitch. She can be single and be perfectly fine as a snow leopard in the Northern Territories being a fucking duchess.
Yeah.
And Adian's being all bossy and mean up to her because he's just like, oh, you didn't consult with me about becoming Aelin and like us having sex in order to make sure that we have like blonde hair babies. I mean, it's icky, but like, why would she confide in you that? Like, that's Aelin's plans. That's why would she like
basically,
I don't know. It's just fucked up.
Lysandra turning into a sea dragon gives me the ick. I'm sorry. It does. I get the ick so bad.
Why? Because they like tricked the
I don't know. Mycenians. She's just like all I don't know.
I like her.
I like her as her little snow leopard. And then she's a sea dragon. I'm like, well, that was easy.
It does feel like she has another power that has no limit.
Yeah.
Because she also turns into like a wyvern.
Yeah.
And so I do agree that her power was like, okay, we need to have some limits on like what she can do.
I like her and her uncle.
I do too. But Adian is so mean to her. And I don't know if you guys remember all the specific scenes, but there's one scene when he basically like calls her a whore and like naked. Kicks her out of his tent naked.
Yeah.
And he calls her a bitch. I was like, I'm sorry. To me, that's like a slur, essentially. It's like men should not be calling women bitches. And so.
And her little girl, she saves, like she's a good person.
Yeah.
Like she'd be fine by herself.
Exactly.
But while we're on the topic, my favorite is Lorcan and Elodie.
Me too. They're the couple that I ship really hard.
Like Lorcan and Aelin's love story is already like solidified.
Yeah.
Mala, it's like, great. It's a mature love story. I love the like falling in love of Elodie and Lorcan.
Yeah, I do too. Well,
the redemption of Lorcan.
Right.
It is redemption, and she turns him into a big old cinnamon roll.
Yes. Obviously, Rowan and Aelin are the iconic couple, but like I really did love Elodie and Lorcan. Like,
well, and Elodie is a true human, and that's hard to find in this world
with a disability.
Yes, going with a disability with like a limp and living in this world and living in this war, and she is probably one of the bravest people in this book.
However,
yes,
then Irene's like, I can help you fix your limp later. I'm like, no. Yeah. Why are we
but
making
she didn't
everything
say yes
perfect?
Or no.
No, but like, why did that even come up? She's fine as she is.
That's how I felt. I was like, we don't need to heal everything.
But Elodie didn't say yes or no.
I know. She should have said no.
Well,
because that's one of my thing with the Kale story arc too, though, is I think that like it takes away the empowering aspect of having disabled characters if you fix them or like quote unquote fix them and be like, oh, everything's better now. When it's like, no. Kale learns to be powerful and in a wheelchair at the same time. Like, Elodie is powerful and smart and weaponizes her intelligence while being disabled. Like,
was loved by a woman despite being disabled. Like,
yeah.
But no, everybody's fixed and happy and whole.
Lame.
It is. It honestly is. Like, happy ending. But it's kind of like, well, I needed a little bit more chaos.
Yeah. No, I agree with
that.
There
was plenty of chaos.
I will say, I appreciated Kale more in this book because he's like actually having to like reckon with his like ducal title or like his own territory and actually having to go back to his homeland and be like, his dad sucks. And reliving that childhood trauma and saying like, yeah, I actually have to rule this land at some point. And I actually have to reckon with this. I can't keep running away from it. So I was like, I see growth in you. I don't like you, but I see growth in you.
It's because he got married and the woman fixed him.
Yeah,
queen. Yeah,
I do think it is annoying that I think big romantasy series have this instinct to give everyone a perfect happy ending, and I think that negates the fact that people have happy endings without a soulmate. Like that can happen, and I think it creates the dynamic where everything is perceived as forgivable. But like, I think Adian's behavior straight up was unforgivable. I'm not saying he's like a bad, irredeemable person, but that does mean that like Lysandra shouldn't be with him and he can be a better person with someone else.
Also, Irene being pregnant in this battle. Ugh.
Disgusting. I hated that plot point.
Why would they, like, just why would you make her pregnant? Like, you don't need to.
It doesn't need to happen. And also, it gave me the extreme ick. This happens in a lot of series, but it's like once you're pregnant, you're all of a sudden so valuable. Like, you have to live. Your humanity is so far above everyone else's. We have to protect you. I was like, I'm sorry. If she doesn't get her little booty into battle, there's not going to be a child to protect because the world is over. Like, why are we acting like, oh, she can't be jeopardizing herself? Like, babe, if she doesn't get out there and help, we're all going to die.
Why are you getting pregnant at the apocalypse?
Yeah. I was like, that's just crazy.
Like, YOLO. Birth control.
YOLO.
Honey, pull out method, something.
They have condoms in this world.
If the
there's always a tonic.
Condoms.
There's always a tonic. Okay, yeah. Someone should have been taking the tonic.
She makes she's tonic. A
yes, she literally could have made her own tonic.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate the pregnancy trope. I hate that she's getting pregnant before the final battle when the world is not settled. Like, what makes you think that bringing a child into this world is smart?
Yeah, your husband could die. Like,
whoopsie day.
Yeah. Anyway, good for her battling anyway, but also wasn't necessary.
No. Okay. Of the kind of, this book brings together like all the characters. So there's characters from the Assassin's Blade that Aelin met while she was off, you know, doing her assassin stuff.
You have to read that.
Yeah.
Novella.
Yes, right. Or else half the characters don't make sense. Mm-hmm. But one of the deepest cuts is Nox returns all the way from book one.
But it's Cal Tane.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cal Tane.
It was crazy.
Though I liked Cal Tane's character arc. Nox, I did feel, was a little bit more random. I was kind of like, all right. I mean, I guess that's fine. But how did you guys feel?
I liked him because I liked him in the first book, but I was like, wait a second. I feel like I know you. And then I'm like, I do know you. You're from like the actual competition. Like,
okay. Add it to the list of the pirates and the assassins and the, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
What is it adding at this point other than,
yeah.
Oh, but he's here.
Right. It did just feel like.
I don't know why I raised my hand. Okay.
If you can't see the video, Catherine and Caitlin are apparently raising their hands, which they did not do on purpose. But yeah, it did feel just like a little too extra to me. I was like, okay, not every single character has to come back from like the fucking trenches of like wherever they were.
It just tells you Sarah J. Maas is thinking of everything.
Bring back Mahia.
She did not bring back. She forgot to bring back the Manon and her golden eyes and why that matters. So yes, I'm angry.
That is true. Unless it's coming back in, like, Crescent City or something like that.
I do think the only character who didn't come back was Nahemia.
Why?
Yeah, but she was talking to her in one of the other books.
Whatever.
Still. Too many characters.
Yes.
So, I mentioned we have a more settled love story from Aelin and Bronwyn. Like, the flirty banter is kind of over, and now it's like, you are my soul. So, what do you think of their love story in this book?
I actually liked it. I thought there are books that I think veer way too hard into cheesy. I think I felt that way about the Welder book. I forget Quicksilver.
The Welder book.
Sorry, that's the best I could do. I also felt this way about When the Moon Hatched, where the main male character just turns into an absolute spineless simp. And it's like, why is that the love story? Like, that's not what we want ultimately from our partners. So why are they doing this?
I mean, we loved it with Rhysand.
Yeah.
But they still argue and stuff. Like, I feel like he's still like, they still interact like real people and not just like, my lady, let me just like give you whatever you want with no complaint.
I only allow it in this book just because he is moving heaven and earth to find Aelin.
Well, I think this book, they don't move it too far.
No,
like, right.
He does everything he can to find her and he gives her space when she's traumatized. But he's also still like, I want you to stay. Like, I'm here for you, but like, let's make good decisions. But I feel like they're in love without being like a doormat. Like,
yeah. Well, because they actually have like discussions and arguments, because like he has some good reasons to be mad at her, because she doesn't tell anyone her plans. And she still does it in this book. Like he realizes like halfway through, like, oh, she's been channeling into her power for like a month, and then just releases it all. And then he's just like, oh, she's just planning on sacrificing herself anyway, even though we found an alternative path. And he realizes, like, he has to argue with her and say, like, you got to stop making plans without me. Like, I am your husband.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do this to me.
Which was very needed.
Yeah. No, because, sorry, no matter how much I love Aelin and I love her shenanigans, she does need to tell people about her shenanigans.
Yeah. She's not always the greatest partner.
No.
No, she's used to working alone as an assassin. Okay.
And we love her for that, but it's time for some growth, baby. It causes
so much chaos.
it does. Okay, so we've already kind of touched on the other couples. Is there anyone else that you guys wanted to give a shout out?
Just going back to Keltaine, shout out to how her storyline ends.
Yes, I do love that.
Another redemption arc. See, everybody gets a redemption arc. Everybody is not a villain in the end, except the two big villains.
But I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maeve is a good villain, though, because she's sort of like a dark gray villain.
She has selfish reasoning, but she's not like evil of the world.
Yeah. And she treated the people who were under her control really poorly, but she actually didn't really treat her general world badly.
Yeah. I guess.
I like Maeve as a villain.
I like Maeve, yeah.
What about, okay, so we get a million battle scenes, like whole books battle scenes, and there's a bunch of sacrifices. And first, though, what about Gabriel's sacrifice for his son, Adian?
It literally made no sense to me.
Correct.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm sorry, why was this necessary?
Yeah. I was like,
you can't close the gate without him sacrificing himself. Like,
you just needed to kill someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did think that it was fine that he died. Yeah. Also, I think Fenris should have died.
Fenris like, died, yeah.
The whole, like, where you're going to be bonded to me and I'm going to order you to live. I was like, I'm sorry, but no.
You can't order someone to live. That's not how that works.
No. Kill a character. And he's a side character that we don't even need. Like, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she thought we were more invested in Adian than we were, so that like losing his dad and like
he didn't even like his dad.
Yeah, I know. So yeah. I think he thinks we were more invested, but we were all like, okay.
I was like, I don't really care.
We don't actually like Adian, so
what? Right. Care about who his parents were. So I was like, okay,
right.
Like, and
you two would be invested in Gabriel. You had to be invested in Adian, and we were not.
Right. I did think there were battle scenes that were like a little bit too much. Like specifically when they're with Kale at his home, the like fortress that is their home. I was kind of like, we don't need to be switching to this perspective that much. Like, I just felt like everything else that was happening was more interesting. And so I felt like she felt obligated to do an even rotation where you hit every character every time. And yeah. I was like, look, like, just endless fighting when they, like, continue to just be losing is, like, I don't need to hit that every time. Like, I'm more interested in the characters that are, like, making moves and doing stuff right now as opposed to just, like, fighting a losing battle.
Yeah.
Now, the epic scene is when she pulls some Marvel Endgame shit and opens all these portals and all these pop in to start fighting. It's literally Marvel Endgame.
Avengers Endgame.
Yeah. And that was epic but also like she somehow became the word keyword gate and can open portals.
Well, she is the word gate, yes.
So weird.
Didn't make sense to me. Yeah.
But it was badass and it was like, everybody's here, they can win.
if I had read that like right after Avengers Endgame, that song would be playing in my head.
But it was epic.
Yeah. But that was before Avengers Endgame came out. So maybe they took liberty from Sarah J. Maas.
Maybe Marvel is inspired by Sarah J.
Maas. I mean, just saying.
That would be kind of iconic of
that. That is literally what I pictured now when I picture that scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch is there.
So now we're going to talk about the most impactful deaths in the whole series, dude. The 13 dying killed me. I cried during that scene.
Sacrifice themselves.
We are they the do.
From now until darkness takes us.
Yes, dude. And what it means for Manon, like how devastated she is about it, like it hit me so hard.
There's like a fan theory that them yielding just sends them to like the Akatar universe or something.
That's interesting.
Okay.
yes, that was like the best death. And Catherine's question, did you two soulless people cry? I shed a tear and I don't cry at books. It was sad and Manon's heartbreak, but understanding was devastating. And she almost lost Abraxos too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, not our wildflower child.
Oh my God.
Our wyvern that loves flowers.
Yeah, dude, it was one of the best written scenes in the book. Yeah. And Manon's grief about it is also very well written, which makes it even more impactful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I also grew up with people that are still like my really close friends. So I feel like, you know, when you have those relationships with people like, oh, my friend, like you guys just talked to Leighton last week. It's like these people who have been with you for years and years and years, like thinking about losing them and then thinking about how much that must have like hurt her. I was like, no.
Oh, I sobbed.
I told someone once, I was like, if I were to ever get a bookish tattoo, it would probably have to do with the 13.
Yeah. And I love a girl gang. Like, it felt uniquely designed to hurt me.
We've been building up this girl gang since Era Fire.
And like Manon, the precipice of success.
Yeah.
And now her friends won't be with her for it.
Yeah.
But like we hear about like Astrid, one of the 13, mm-hmm. and her story about her baby.
Yeah.
And all of that, like we have learned to love these women mm-hmm. and love their sisterhood with each other and creating their own coven outside of their selves, mm-hmm. outside of their own like Iron Team clans. Yeah. It was heartbreaking. I did not expect Sarah J. Maas to kill them off. Like that was like surprise.
It was like she did the hard thing.
Yeah, she did the hard thing.
She could have done more hard things, but she did this hard thing.
And of course, me being the crybaby of the group, I sobbed. You shed one single tear, and Casey did cry. So we all cried.
Because it is too. So it's well like written. It is.
I know and not it's everybody also like, loves SJM, but that scene you can't
very argue. Well written. No, and it is. It's just like. Their loyalty to each other, their loyalty to each other is what like set them back on the right path. And so I think it's even more devastating because it's like they did the right thing, you know, like they made the right choice. They decided like they loved each other more than they loved obeying the witches and climbing the ranks within the witches. And so it's like so painful.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's one particular scene towards the end where Aelin is sort of closing the gates that have allowed Eowyn and Etcetera's, all these dastardly creatures in. And she's getting rid of their kind of old gods who we find out are really just like isolated travelers who want to go back to their original world.
And they suck.
They suck
real bad. So Aelin... on her way back to her world ends up like falling through all these different worlds. And we find out that she gets to like see the Court of Dreams and she gets to see the like setting of the big city in Crescent City. What did you guys think of all that?
Okay. I definitely did read this before Silver Flames. Cause I was like, oh my God, Feyre's pregnant in the future. And then I was like, oh no. Yeah, no, that's Silver Flames. it was wholesome. It gave you a little hug, you know, towards the end of the book. It was cheesy, but it was a hug.
It was cheesy, but this is the first time she connected the worlds. And it was interesting because she was, like, falling really, really fast. And she's like, I don't think I'm going to make it if I fall this fast into my world. And Rhysand uses his magic to stop her. And it makes me think that... are all of those star falls like Aelin-esque people.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about that, too.
What? Yeah. Because, like, the whole thing about the Starfall is that they're wandering, like, souls.
Yeah, but they, like, land on them and stuff.
Yeah.
Ew.
Don't get your soul juice on me. Ew.
But, like, Reese, it's like a bug splattering on a windshield.
Reese has the insight to, like, stop her.
Yeah, how does Reese know how to do that?
Also, Amryn is definitely part Asteri in my head or something.
Yes.
I could totally agree. See that. Yes.
But she talks about how soulless they are and how like they just use other worlds.
And she's beyond time and space, it seems like.
She's part Asteri for sure. Or she knows them well.
Or is full. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. That's another. All the worlds are connecting. And we thought, based on this little blip, that in Crescent City 3, it would be magical and magnificent, and it actually sucked.
Right.
Nessa's like, here's a sword. See ya.
So, the other part of this is then Dorian's father makes an appearance, and then Elena gets her ending. Not a happy one.
What she did you guys deserves say it. Well, because because Brandon was going to be the one who sacrificed himself, like, nameless is my price.
Yeah.
He was going to be the one to close the gates and release the gods. And that would mean that he loses himself. He sacrifices himself and becomes nameless in history. But Elena doesn't know that. And so she decides to meddle and stop it. And then Brandon's like, you foolish girl, you have just condemned our future offspring to have to do this for you. And that's where Aelin and Dorian come in, especially Aelin, because they set their sights on her because they think she's more developed, I guess, than Dorian.
That's which makes no sense. Exactly. It makes no sense. Yeah.
It makes no sense. And then they try to do it together, and Aelin kind of like kicks Dorian out because she sees how it's hurting him. And then the king comes in and saying, like, I'll take his place. And I mean, I like that Aelin sacrificed her power. And I liked that we saw the gods because they kept being talked about. And we were like, what do you mean?
Yeah, but then one of them gives her power back.
Yeah.
She had no power for like 30
But that was
seconds.
Her grandmother. Her great-grandmother.
Yeah, but she had no power for like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Also, Aelin gets a little slice of revenge.
Yes.
I was like, Loki, is this how other holes in the world happened? Because also that I was wondering if this connected somehow to A Court of Thorns and Roses, because Amryn talks about how there's a rip that just appears one day in her world and some of them get sucked into it.
Yeah. I mean, probably people meddling.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I liked that it wasn't easy. I liked Dorian's father showing up, even though it felt a little convenient to me. Elena's ending did make me sad because, I don't know, it just felt like Aelin tried to do the right thing and, like, tried to, like, forgive her, and then the gods just, like, fucked her over for no reason.
Also, they're, like, handing out happy endings, and they're just, like, psych. He's the only one who doesn't get, like, a redemption arc or a happy ending, like, they're just psych.
Yeah. And then they, like, fuck Aelin over and don't take Irwin. And I was like, that's just, like, so shit of you.
They're like, yeah, we're not going to take Irwin, actually. Sorry. And then Aelin gets her revenge for doing that.
Yeah. And they deserved that.
They 100% deserve that. What assholes.
I don't even know what revenge was.
What?
What was the revenge? I don't remember.
She, like, uses her power to, like, rip a hole in the world of the gods. So they go into the portal, and then she, like, basically tears a hole for, like, you know, Irwin types to get through.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, speaking of Irwin and Maeve, did you guys find their deaths satisfying?
Do you think his name inspired the grocery store?
What grocery store?
Irwin.
Is that a grocery store?
The fancy one in, like, L.A. that all the celebrities go get those smoothies.
I'm sorry. I've literally never heard of it.
No. Okay. Onward.
I liked that Maeve was, like, the final death. Because I think she was always the big bad, but we got confused with, you know, like the Valg princes, but the fact that like in Tower of Dawn we connected Maeve as like his queen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was clever to make Maeve final the ending, and like Erewhon and Maeve kind of meeting up slightly and being like, yeah, hello wifey.
By the way, the grocery store is founded in 1966, so not inspired.
It's all differently, like not even close to the same spelling.
Anyway, okay. So by this point in the book, I was kind of ready for it to be over.
Yes. Like, how many endings are there?
Yes,
it's already ended twice.
The fact that they closed the gates and got all the word keys, I actually think should have felt more significant, and I think the actual like ending of the book should have come like right after that, because so they closed the gates and then I'm kind of like, okay, so why do we need to do that so bad? Because then like nothing changes, like,
yeah, like all the bad people are still here except,
yeah,
the gods.
Well, because the gods are supposed to take them.
Yeah, but Maeve's still there.
Yeah, and you so know, I'm like, and now Aelin just has to do what she had to do before, but with no power. And so I was like, I just expected that to like be more significant to the end of the book. And especially because once, like, okay, Maeve and Erewhon put so much effort into finding the word keys that I was like, does the fact that they're gone now change nothing? Like, why? Because so many of the books are about that. I was like, why did we spend so much time on that?
Well, because Maeve doesn't want more Valg to come through. And mm-hmm. the Erewhon wants it so more Valg can come through.
Yeah.
But they act like if you have all three keys, you can, like, unlock the powers of the universe and, like,
I mean,
make weapons and control people.
She fell through, so.
I mean, yeah, you kind of do unlock the powers of the universe.
But then I'm like, shouldn't it matter that they're gone now? Like, shouldn't yeah. that thwart something?
Bryce gets all the mask and stuff, so she yeah. can, she essentially gets like all the power in the world. Like, you can, but also, yeah, it seems like Aelin was trying to get these keys from these two entities that have just been battling it out to keep each other from having the keys, and she's kind of like, well, what do I do with them now?
Right.
It makes you think, were these word keys Asteri keys, or were they part of the world already? And they're like the counteracting to the Asteri, like the cauldron.
Yeah, or you think about the gates in Crescent City. Like, mm-hmm. is it similar? I don't know.
Right. And so I think I ultimately liked the death scenes for Erewhon and Maeve, but I was just sort of like, I didn't think the ending totally came together and everything connected as it should. And also after closing the gates, I was like, okay, I'm ready for this to be over. Like, I think they should have been more closely attached and come together more quickly.
The order happened so that she could open all the portals for that badass Marvel scene.
Literally. Yeah. But I was like, it felt like two different endings. Like, closing the gates felt like an ending, and then the ending of Erewhon and Maeve felt like an ending, and then the book keeps going.
We've been looking for the end with the word keys,
right? You get
yeah.
the
and then it doesn't end things.
And then you get the end of the big bad, and then you get the happy ending.
Yes. Well, and so after the big bads ended, I literally wanted the story to just end. Like, I wanted everyone to look at each other and be like, thank God we get to keep on living with our like loves, and then I wanted the book to be over. But instead you get this whole almost like epilogue, but the epilogue is like six chapters.
I like the epilogue, but I like a happy ending.
No, I'm against it. I was like, end the book. End the book.
Aelin can finally stop bitching about the Blood Oath.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my God.
That's what the epilogue gives us.
Right.
Stop bitching. And I like that Aelin gets the crown and is given to her by the older royals of Terrasen, and like they actually accept her now. And I did like that
they better at this point.
I know, seriously. But the fact that they didn't accept her in the beginning is bullshit. I like how it kind of ended with Aelin, Dorian, and Kale, because that's how it started yes. the series. And they all were like, I love you. It's great to see you.
Mm-hmm.
What I guess we'll go on to live our lives. I kind of like that.
When they're all ruling their own little slice of the world.
Yes.
Right. Yes. So, of course, Aelin's crowned, blah, blah, blah. Was the book worth nearly 1,000 pages?
Yeah.
Yes. I wish it wasn't that long, but like, it was worth the read.
If the book is 900 pages, I think it was probably worth like 750. Like,
yeah,
I think it could have been like shorter.
300 too long.
Yeah. Like, I think it could have been shorter, but I think in general, like, I'm not mad at it.
No. Like, you've already put that much time in the series. What was the number? Catherine did look it up, how much the whole series is.
So, the whole series, all total. Oh, I lost it. No.
I think it was like 11,000.
11,688 pages is the whole Throne of Glass series.
Oh, my God.
Sarah J. Maas wrote 11,688 pages in one series and then proceeded to write two other series.
And started it when she was 16.
It's kind of sickening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you still going to read it again?
I still want to. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just the whole thing is such an epic odyssey.
Yeah.
And that's why the ending, I think, hit me so hard and why I still love this book so much, even though I obviously have critiques of it.
Yeah.
It's because it's like, I've spent so long waiting, like, with these characters that I care about them so much. Like, mm-hmm. I had to know what happened to them. And saying goodbye to them was actually really emotional. Like, I closed the book and I was like, I can't believe I'm not going to read about them anymore.
The final question for our TikTok users, book talkers, is what did Lorkin do? I had to look it up to explain it to Catherine.
I don't get it.
There's a scene. It's like all over Book Talk. People go, and what did Lorkin do? Their shirts even. They're like, what did Lorkin do? It's because of this one specific scene where him and Elodie, they're like, go in the tent. And she's like, show me everything. And the line is just, and Lorkin did.
It's their fade to black sex scene.
Yeah.
No.
And people are like, what did Lorkin do?
Yeah, so what did Lorkin do? Because if Lorkin did was just the ending fade to black.
Yeah. I'm guessing he did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think people want to know. I saw
someone comment, like, it's self-explanatory.
I do get it, though. We were denied what would have been probably a really good sex scene.
There were a lot of fade to black sex scenes.
There were, but the book was so long. Not everyone can have a whole fucking for 10 pages.
But no one had it.
Personally, I wasn't mad. I was like, everyone has had their love story. I don't need to read people fucking in this book. Like, let's just get to it.
Also, it started out as YA. So and where this, are we now?
You can't
keep
this book YA. I'm sorry. It's too long to be YA.
And have some sex scenes. So it's like, okay, what do you call this series now overall?
Adult.
New adult,
yeah, I think. Because even in the sex scenes, there's not a ton of sex scenes in the series, even though they have them. Yeah, and they're not too crazy.
Yeah.
They're romantic.
They are romantic. And they're all with people that have been together for a while, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you guys have a favorite storyline to follow?
Yeah, Elodie and Lorkin.
I think Manon was my favorite. Elodie and Lorkin was a close second. Aelin's storyline in general was also really compelling.
But. Oh, yeah. No, I'm Aelin all the way. Aelin, Rowan, and her just in general storyline was my favorite.
Yeah. But Manon and the 13.
My favorite was Kale and Irene.
Oh, shut up.
No one believes you.
Yeah. No one says that.
Yeah, I did. Okay. I did love, if you read Assassin's Blade, Irene's full circle story.
Yes.
Back up with Aelin. And you realize Aelin has been building her army for years. Yes. Just through kind deeds.
Yes. I did think that was a nice touch in the book, just sort of thematically in general.
Girl power.
Plus also Nox for some reason.
Yeah.
It's all here.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. I mean, should we even do book recommendations? I don't know.
Okay, honestly, and I saw this in the summary I was reading. The volume of battle scenes is giving Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
You could read that. It's an epic fantasy with several characters and tons and tons of battle scenes.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to be kind of weirdly basic and recommend Harry Potter.
Good one.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I think that was sort of a pivotal book for all of us, but we never really recommend it. I'm assuming just because we all read it so long ago.
Yeah.
But when I think about just like the emotional investment I had in these characters and the craziness and also like the joy and attachment that I felt for them watching them grow through this series, I think the only series that really comes to mind of kind of eliciting the same feeling is Harry Potter, where you start with them so young and by the end they've like grown so much and the book becomes progressively more adult as you go.
The seventh book is also massive.
Right.
Massive book. I think I'm going to be obvious and say Fourth Wing. I feel like that elicits like a very similar response. A lot of fighting scenes also as well. Not a completed series, so I don't know the ending. There are not a lot of completed series out there, I'm not going to lie. People have not been finishing their fucking series.
It's because as soon as it gets popular, they just like extend it. I'm like,
I feel like a lot of the finished series we like to recommend are from like our teen years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Jackson, but that's still going on.
And stuff.
Hunger Games is still going on.
Well, we messed our world up, so she had to come back.
Yeah.
That's our fault.
She had something to say.
Okay, so these are just our opinions per usual, but we love hearing from you guys. So if there's something you want us to read and review, let us know. You can find us at Busy Girls Pod on pretty much all social media. You can also visit our website, busygirlspod.com. We also keep a list of our book recommendations there. And please rate and review our podcast. Only if you're feeling 5 stars, if that's what your heart says, I'll never ask you to lie. Rate and review our podcast. If not, it's okay.
I'll ask you to yourself.
And also get on your mom's phone and also give us 5 stars from her account.
Lie and thank you.
Lying and cheating. Thank you. So yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.